Hello and welcome to the Dream Swarm podcast. This is your home for supernatural film, stories and art. I'm your host, magic realist filmmaker Andy Mark Simpson. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Dream Swarm. I'm really pleased today to be joined by Melanie Lynch, who is the founder of Her Story, and she's going to tell us all about it. So welcome, Melanie.
Thanks so much for having me, Andy. Delighted to be with you.
Oh, you're welcome. I've been really looking forward to having you on the show because I've been following Her Story for a while. Could you tell the audience just briefly what Her Story is and what the aims of the organisation are?
Sure, yeah. So Her Story is a multidisciplinary storytelling platform. And we tell the stories of mythic, modern and historic women. I suppose one of our big aims is to create authentic education program for young people, for school children, because there's a big gap in the school curriculum in terms of the representation of women. And we want to fill that gap. So that's one of our big aims. Another aim, I suppose, is to see countries all around the world start their own Her Story movements, because Ireland is no exception in terms of the amnesia and dilution and omission of women's stories and the authentic representation of the feminine. So this, for me, I suppose Her Story is really about the rise of the feminine and all her authenticity and her true authentic power, and to create a dance to equality, because I really believe in what I call compassionate feminism, that we need to take the anger out of feminism. I understand that the first two waves, you know, were catalyzed by anger, and that anger was very much justified and incredibly powerful to work with. Anger has a huge energy and emotion, but I really feel that the next wave, this new wave, has to be compassionate. Like, we can definitely harmonize the process towards equality. So that's a big part of what we do and why we do it.
Like you're saying, there's a kind of amnesia about women's stories in history and those being written down and studied and remembered. So I know you look at women in history and then also modern women as well, and then in mythology as well, and which we'll get onto. So there's quite a few strings to the bow there of Her Story, and lots to talk about throughout the interview. Maybe we could start with some of the women in history, because I know you've recently had a TV series on in RTE in Ireland. Could you tell us how that series came about, and maybe about some of the stories of the women featured in the series?
Yeah, sure. So I suppose that series is sparked by an extraordinary discovery. Her Story was a few months old, and I sat down with the Royal Irish Academy in Dublin, and they said, look, we've got something to tell you. We decided to count the number of women in the Dictionary of Irish Biography, and there's over 1,000 women's biographies sitting there. And these women had to, like, have achieved something remarkable to get into that dictionary. So the thought that our school curriculum has, I think it's like 5 women officially on the curriculum and then a few on the fringes, and yet at the same time there's a national educational resource that has over 1,000 women's biographies, you go, what? Why aren't the Department of Culture and the Department of Education talking to each other, and how can we start that conversation? So I sat down with RTÉ and I said, look, we've made this discovery, the scale of it's huge, and we just have to get the women on the TV. You know, it's really important, we need to create these educational resources for the schools. So, and that's very much what's happened. So since the TV series is made, Her Story is now an official resource for the secondary school curriculum for the junior history cycle, which is a wonderful achievement. I'm really proud of it. I'll never forget the day, actually, I met with the fifth class students in Blanchardstown. They're a class of 11-year-old girls, and they created the Suffragette Cafe inspired by our first ever school workshop back in 2017. They brought all the women's stories to life from the suffragette movement. They had a theatre production and a beautiful art exhibition, and they had an entrepreneurial module where they raised funds for St. Vincent de Paul, and they created suffragette costumes from the St. Vincent de Paul locally from the shop, and they just completely blew me away. And their first request was, when are we going to see the women on the telly? We need to see these, our new heroines, on the telly. So I could take that to RTÉ and said, look, you've got to talk to these 11-year-olds. They're adamant. The women have to be on the telly. So that was another catalyst as well. You know, when you've got the young voices like that speaking such truth and such fire, you go, okay, I owe it to them. I owe it to them to get them on the women on the telly.
Could you maybe illustrate some of the stories that were highlighted in that TV series? Because there were women in Irish history mainly was the focus, but as you say, there's similar movements starting up in other countries. But I know there's loads in the series. Any particular favourites you can think of?
Mother Jones is my favourite by a long run. And nobody can touch her, really, because she was motivated for the greater good of humanity and for those who were the most oppressed, women, children, working class workers. She led a children's march on Roosevelt's home. Like, she just was a badass. She was dubbed the most dangerous woman in America for her activism. And she was very witty, very brilliant. I loved how she wrote newspaper headlines. She had a real way with propaganda and spinning the press. She was very smart and huge fire and compassion. She just, nobody can touch her for me. She was really an extraordinary role model to be able to share with young people. And what an alternative to like celebrity culture today, when I, you know, sit down with the young girls and they can tell me what Kim Kardashian had for breakfast. I'm like, well, wait a second here. Have you heard of Mother Jones? You know, so you just, there's no comparison. So, and I also loved Lady Mary Heath. She was actually the original Queen of the Skies. She was more famous than Amelia Earhart in her day. She was the first person in the world to fly the length of Africa. And she performed this feat in an open air cockpit. She was from Limerick, and there's just a little plaque on the wall to her in Limerick. So to have a TV episode commissioned about her when everybody in the world knows the name of Amelia Earhart, most people do, she's a household name, so it was lovely to see her reinstated to her full glory. I loved her. Yeah, I was a big fan of her character too. She was very tenacious, and again, somebody who overcame a lot of trauma. Her dad murdered her mother when she was a small baby, and she overcame a huge tragedy within her family to achieve the extraordinary. So a great role model for young girls too.
Speaking of inspiring the younger generation, you've done quite a lot of workshops for schools, as you mentioned so far. What's the plan there for the future? What else are you working on at the moment?
Well, I have to say, Andy, I wouldn't be able to do it without yourself and Emma, and a huge credit just for your listeners. Andy has been instrumental in his role in co-creating the school workshops, and with his wonderful fiancée, Dr. Emma Black, who's an amazing educational psychologist, a very dear friend of mine. And I reached out to Emma, actually. I think her story was a few months old, and I said, look, I need an educational psychologist on this project, because I felt very strongly that we have to be careful what we fill young people's minds with. And I think with something like history, the narratives are so dark and so full of domination and repression, colonialism, the darkest forces, war. And it doesn't have to be that way. And I think it's very important to have the skills of psychology to teach young people to unpack history and to reimagine a new story, because I feel that strongly about it. So that you've both been so instrumental, and I love our conversations when we sit down and we do the workshops together, and we develop different concepts and ideas, and they're like some of my fondest moments of her story, is like when we do our brainstorms. So thank you so much for your contribution. And I know like that the recent RTE school workshops that we developed for the TV series, they've over 3,000 downloads, so 90,000 students have actually completed those workshops, and I hear stories about the impact they're having in schools, and it's incredibly humbling to know that we can have such an impact and inspire young people. You don't know what the long-term impact is going to be. We can't really see that yet. Yeah, but it's amazing.
I mean, as you say, I've joined in, and I don't want to take too much credit, because it's your hard work, Melanie. Her stories, it's focused on some women's stories in history and bringing those to life. But I think over the past year, I mean, I'm as a history graduate myself, I think the study of history needs to be spoken about a bit more, and actually people's perceptions of what history is. So, you know, how big things with Black Lives Matter and discussing, you know, the statues we have in public places, and saying, well, what justifies them having a statue, and is there another side of the story there? And then there was, you know, kind of debates, people saying, oh, you can't bring down the statues, that's destroying history, or no, you shouldn't look further into that because it's destroying history. But actually it's not, it's actually dispelling some of the myths of history, and it's actually getting into stories that haven't been heard. So Black people in history, and again looking at the negative side and all the, you know, slavery and oppression, but actually also looking at the achievements of those people that have been overlooked, and looking at the positive side and going, no, look what they achieved, but it hasn't been spoken about yet. And
of course,
similar kind of thing with her story is that you can look at women's oppression in Ireland and around the world, but also you can look at their achievements and, you know, the great things that they've accomplished and things that should be celebrated. So, I mean, that's what I've really liked about engaging with her story. But also I see that those patterns are similar in other cultures as well, and actually taking an interest in history and in those marginalized voices and recovering those from history is really important as well.
Completely, yeah. And that's why the next project that we're launching in March on International Women's Day is exploring the duality of race, the polarities, how they're constructed. I did my degree thesis on deconstructing colonial ideologies and racial stereotyping back 12 years ago during Obama's presidential campaign, and it's taken me 12 years to crack a creative solution, because I was in art college at the time, and my tutor said to me, look, if you want to do a creative project as in response to your written thesis, you can. And I was just so blinded by the trauma of having to study colonialism and the darkness, just the psychological process that somebody would go on to create that othering. It took me, yeah, it's taken me a long time, but I'm really happy about what we're creating. And we're going to be exploring the duality of emigration, immigration, two sides of the same story. Because in Ireland, you know, we have our diaspora all around the world, one of the largest diasporas in the world, and 70 million people call themselves Irish, and they love their Irishness. Still pinching ourselves, still trying to understand what it means to be Irish, because it can be a very humbling experience when even the Parisians light up when you say you're Irish and they don't even like the rest of the French. So it still baffles and bamboozles us a little bit. But we have this diaspora that we cherish all around the world, and yet, you know, have we been the most welcoming to the people who come and joined us from distant shores around the world? And what does that say about us as a people? So that project is going to be produced in partnership with organizations in Egypt, Israel, Palestine, the Czech Republic, Slovenia, Northern Ireland, and the Republic. And it's work that I'm really, really proud of, and I'm really excited about. I'd love to develop that into a 3-4 year project with its own TV series too, because I think we're in a very polarizing era, but you've got to remember that polarities are just constructions. It's fabrication. And the great truth is that we are actually one humanity, and that's what we need to be focusing on. So how do we explore and deconstruct and resolve polarities to return to that great truth and dissolve the divisions, really? Because they're not real. Like, it's just a load of bullshit, if you ask me, to be quite frank, really, you know. So yeah, I feel very passionate about Black Lives Matter and the representation of minorities. And I think that's one of the parts that broke my heart about the RT series. It was supposed to be multicultural more so, but, you know, I didn't call the editorial shots within RT, and they had to focus on a specific, I suppose, aspect of her story. And they chose to focus on the historical Irish women, which unfortunately means mainly middle class in representation too, because, you know, working class women didn't have agency. They didn't have any access to realize their dreams, which is, it's a harrowing insight in itself. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to expanding the representation of her story this year to include more marginalized voices. Yeah, so that's where we're at, really. It's really exciting. It's a great time, I think, to be alive. It's challenging, but there's a lot of hope, especially when I see young people today, and they're just so politically savvy, so socially aware, and they are actually much more inclusive than their, you know, certainly in Ireland anyway, they're much more inclusive than their older generations. So yeah, they give me great hope, actually, I have to say. There was a lovely moment. We did a project called Who's Your Heroine as part of the RT series, and we asked young people to nominate their heroines, and the prize was you'd get your heroine brought to life in an animated short film. It was just extraordinary. It's like such a cool opportunity. I remember sitting down, we talked to RT, and we were having conversations around, like, who are the heroines of our youth? Like, who do Irish people look up to? And, you know, would they be the patriarchal, you know, definitions of what success is, like breaking world records and creating amazing inventions? And I said to RT, I said, let's not just put any framework or restrictions on what we're asking for. It's just who's your heroine? That's the question. It could be somebody in your family. It could be a trailblazer. And it was really interesting, insightful, the submissions that we got. The Irish young people put equal focus on caring and compassion as they do on breaking world records. So their value system is all about caring and compassion. And I just thought, wow, there's hope for the future. When you see that, you know, an insight like that, whereas I think it took 6 months later for the COVID pandemic to start, and then for the adult population in Ireland to realize actually that's where our focus needs to be, on caring, compassion.
Yeah.
And not always striving to succeed and make more money and, you know, achieve more success, and in doing so put more pressure on the planet and nature and our own well-being, and the neglect of our families, and what really, really fundamentally matters. Our young people are already there. So I just thought, wow, brilliant. Rock on, the future.
You're inspiring for the young people there. You talked about celebrating those heroines as well, and yeah, you're making up for some gaps in history there, and you have done so far, highlighting Irish women, but then you're looking for more hidden stories. Some of the ways you celebrated that have been pretty spectacular, really. I'm thinking of the Nulag na Bán celebrations, and you've put illuminations on public buildings around Ireland and showing these figures. Could you talk about those projects?
Sure. I suppose for me, the power of light is, it's just extraordinarily transformational, and we're bringing the women out of the shadows into the light. So it's about what has been hidden, what's been left lurking in the deep dark recesses of history and in popular culture, and how we bring that to light. It started, actually, the epiphany came to me, would you believe, literally a light bulb moment, pardon the pun. I was meditating one day on a really rainy, miserable afternoon, and I just thought, God, well, if Ireland lights up the world green on St. Patrick's Day, why don't we light up and honour women? You know, St. Patrick was one man, what about all the women? So that's how it started, and then it went viral the first year around Ireland. Like, I put the call out to county councils, like 6 weeks before Christmas, rather. Like, normally it should be 6 months before Christmas, and they just got behind it at lightning speed. It was really extraordinary. And then from there, it's grown every year. It went international in the second year. I think one of my favorite light shows that we did was last year in Northern Ireland. We illuminated Belfast City Hall in honor of the peace heroines of Northern Ireland. And just serendipitously, Bridget's Day aligned with Brexit, which is a day of great uncertainty and fear for the people of Northern Ireland. So to come together and to celebrate the peace heroines and to really realign with the vision of the peace process on that day was just extraordinarily powerful. That was very humbling, very beautiful experience, and to meet so many of the heroines there in the room. So that light show has inspired a new project that I'm also working on called Peace Heroines of the World. So we're going to be researching and celebrating peace heroines from all across the world, all the different continents, the role of women in the peace process, which they don't get the credit fair is due that they deserve, and women can often have a different approach to peace than men too, so we can learn from both sides. I think both men and women have different approaches and different ways of doing it, but yeah, the feminine way can be very healing and transformative and very compassionate, because we're naturally disposed towards peace, you know, and I think most men are too, but really that patriarchal wound, you know, the warring cultures that are perpetrated through our history books and in popular culture, you know, all of humanity has suffered from war, men and women, and how we heal those wounds and how we realign with peace, which is, it's the highest vibrational emotion you can actually experience. So it's even higher than love and joy. Yeah. So this week when we had an announcement about the mother and baby home report scandal in Ireland, which just is, we're still all processing it here. It's incredibly painful wound in our living history. I spent the day yesterday working on Peace Heroines of the World project just to try and transmute and alchemize that wound. So and we'll also be doing a very special tribute to the survivors and victims of the mother and baby's homes, the Magdalen Laundries, on Bridget's Day this year. I wanted to do that for some time, actually. Very powerful photographs to share. Yeah, and that's the power of light. I think it's in how it illuminates and heals and transforms, and how you work with the archetype of Bridget, who is a goddess of healing and a goddess of fire, alchemy and poetry and the creative arts, and how you can use creativity and light to heal. So yeah, so that's where the light show is at the moment, and where it's heading. Sneak peek for what's coming up.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned St. Bridget's Day there. A few of your events have taken place around there, your light shows. You've got a campaign going to heighten the significance of St. Bridget's Day some more. I've taken more interest in it since knowing you and learning more about the history of Ireland. And
yeah,
people think, you know, St. Patrick's Day, and everyone's who isn't even Irish is wearing a silly hat and drinking Guinness all of a sudden. And but it's a bit of a cartoon thing. But where St. Bridget's Day, I think that I like that time of year. I'm learning to love that time of year now, where it's, you know, looking at pagan calendars and how it was a significant day, you know, in there where it falls between the solstice and the equinox. And you've got festivals, groundhog festivals in the US and things, and seen as maybe the beginning of spring. Can you tell us more about the significance of the day and maybe how you're trying to make it be more significant in the popular culture, but also then maybe expand on St. Bridget herself? And you've said a little bit about her, but maybe talk about her as a figure as well.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I suppose when you put it in context of St. Patrick's Day, to think that St. Patrick's Day, like you said, is celebrated all around the world, like people wear silly hats, you know, in the US they dye the rivers green, there's parades like everywhere, like the diaspora have set the standards, like Ireland had to catch up, they took it more seriously than we ever did. And then to think that our matron saint doesn't even have a national holiday, let alone a parade, or, you know, nobody's dyeing the rivers orange for her, you know. So it's just quite a disparity, really, in the 21st century. What does that say about modern Ireland when we are, you know, on this dance to equality, as turbulent as it can be at times? Yeah, I just felt that's it. Now this is the time. We have to make Bridget's Day a national holiday. So if you go back thousands of years in ancient Ireland, Imbolc was the feast of the goddess. It's the beginning of spring. So it was traditionally a festival that was taken much more seriously than it is today. But those ancient Irish traditions are re-emerging. We're seeing a lot of the return of the wisdom of the Tudor Danann and before that too. So as a character, as a person, first and foremost, she was a goddess before the saint appeared. And she was a goddess of the Tudor Danann, the ancient Irish enlightened ones. And John Moriarty famously said that the invasion of the Celts was actually more detrimental to Irish culture than the invasion of the Vikings or the British or the Normans, because the Celts brought an end to the goddess culture in Ireland. It was the beginning of the patriarchy, which is the end of enlightenment, because once you, I suppose, align with one side of a polarity, then you're no longer dancing in the middle, which is where the magic is, where the alchemy happens. The goddess culture, I suppose, is what we're trying to reawaken through her story. And I would be very conscious in that process behind the scenes. There's a deeply spiritual dimension to her story and what we're doing, and a mystical dimension to it as well. And Brigid is core to that. So she was a pan-European goddess. She was celebrated all across Europe, from Turkey to Spain. So in the, you know, she'd be a great icon today in an era where Brexit threatens the stability of the EU. And we've got to remember that the EU was a peace project. I know when I was in school, it was thought to us as an economic project, but first and foremost, it was a peace project. And it's been very successful. Europe has enjoyed the longest period of peace that it's had in centuries, thanks to the EU. So I think Brigid, to know that she was a pan-European goddess before she was a saint, like, beautiful, you know, talk about an icon for our times. And if the Irish diaspora and indeed all Europeans got behind her and made her, you know, their national holiday, because she's not just Irish, you know, in that connection, what could we create together, you know? How could we awaken the goddess cultures all across the world? Wow, there's the vision. Whew, didn't think of that before. Epiphanies on the, this is the thing, we and Andy, you know, when we get together, the ideas start to flow. As a saint, she's a real anomaly for Catholicism, because it's recorded in the Annals, which is one of the earliest historical texts written by the monks, actually, would you believe, that she was an abortionist and a lesbian. So quite the anomaly. In the wording is that she restored a nun's chastity. Yeah, so that's how we know she was an abortionist. Yeah, and that she shared a bed with a woman. It's in the Annals, there you go. And that fascinates me that the Catholic Church never went back and airbrushed that out, because they're devils for airbrushing, you know, they're renowned for it. I love that that truth still remains, that rings true today, and that she was then a great icon for the repeal of the 8th referendums in Ireland and the marriage equality referendum too. So she represents true Christianity. She was, you know, famous for her compassionate care of the poor and of animals, and there's so many epic legends of her. Like, she's one of those characters that I always challenge people not to get lazy, because there's a story of her amazing cloak, and you know, everybody makes these beautiful woven Brigid's crosses from rushes, but I'm like, don't get lazy with Brigid. There's just, keep digging, you'll find so many stories about her. So, and there are on our website, in the Her Story website, you can go and you can learn all about her. So that's Brigid. And actually recently we did a very powerful light show for Nollag na Mban in partnership with Safe Ireland and Marion Bergen. And the theme was woman and child. And we commissioned two incredible creatives, Miriam Riand and Anya O'Brien, to create a new photographic series, reimagining and reclaiming archetypes, ancient Irish archetypes. And I got to realize one of my dreams. I've always wanted to cast Eru as a mixed race teenage girl, because that's the new Ireland, and she's on the cusp of menarche. So she just, you know, got her first period, and she's, you know, embracing womanhood in all her fiery glory, and she's cast as a warrior goddess, and she's got her baron, which symbolizes the moon, which is the moon time for women. So it was just, yeah, that was a really powerful moment. And to see the new Eru, the new modern Eru, illuminated on the GPO and Christchurch Cathedral and the Magdalen laundries, is just like, that was really special. And really important that these archetypes, they might be ancient, but we can reimagine them and bring them to life for modern times too.
Archetypes traveled through stories throughout time, and then but they never it's not set in stone. It's up to societies to use those storytelling tools to, as you say, highlight, bring new stories to life and highlight forgotten stories of people who've been kind of marginalized as well. Melanie, this has been a really good interview. So you mentioned your website before. Could you just tell the listeners how they can follow you? How can they stay in touch?
Yeah, sure. So the website is herstory.ie. You can sign up for the newsletter on the contact page. We're great with newsletters. We only send them out when there's actually something to say. So you'll probably get a newsletter once every 2 or 3 months. Yeah, when we go quiet, it's because we're up to a lot of mischief, and then we come out all guns blazing. Well, not guns blazing, because we're pacifists, but you know what I mean. And then you can follow the action on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Her Story Ireland is the handle. Yeah.
Herstory.ie for your website as well.
And please start Her Story movements all around the world, and take the project on and make it dance wherever you are. That's why none of the copy is copyrighted on the website, for that reason. I wanted to bolt.
Just as it being inspiring the youth in Ireland, you can inspire people elsewhere as well. Well, we'll stop the interview there then, Melanie, but thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Andy. Wonderful chat. And I'm looking forward to developing the next workshop series with you soon.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dream Swarm podcast. I've been your host, Andy Mark Simpson. We hope you'll join us for the next one. Remember, you can subscribe to stay in touch with future episodes. And follow us at the website www.dreamswarm.org, or follow on Twitter and Instagram at Dream Swarm. And we look forward to joining you for more supernatural film stories and art. In the meantime, be creative, be curious, be kind. We'll see you soon.